really quite funny. That's a series of four videos that was produced by a Christian apologist. You can find them all online on YouTube under Meet the Nativity if you'd like to watch the whole series. In Matthew chapter 2, we read about the visit of the Magi to Jesus after he's been born. And I wouldn't be true to my own personality if I didn't start this sermon with a bit of a Christmas caveat. Caveats which tend to drive people crazy, or at least they drive my mom crazy. Because my mom really loves nativity sets. She's loved them forever, as far as I'm concerned. And she started collecting them when I was young. Beautiful and ornate ones, or simple and kid-friendly ones, or abstract ones, all of it. She loves all of it. And she started collecting them and has so many now that I've completely lost count. But every year when the Christmas decorations came out of the cupboard and out of the attic and started being put around the house, all of these nativity sets started going up in every room. Now, I noticed at quite a young age, you might imagine, that the Magi weren't really meant to be there at the birth scene of Jesus in the manger with Mary and Joseph and the shepherds. And this is a very common misrepresentation in modern nativity sets. And so something that I would do after the Christmas decorations had all gone out is I would go quietly from room to room and I would take the three wise men and just set them on a windowsill across the way, and I'd go to the next room and I'd take the three wise men and I'd set them. And Mom would sort of constantly, it was a little game that we played, she'd constantly go back and retrieve them or find them, and I just had to keep saying, no, the Magi haven't arrived yet. They're still a long way off. They can't be there. But here in Matthew chapter 2, we have recorded the visit of those Magi. Maybe there were three of them, maybe there were less. That's a whole other Christmas caveat. I think that there are some important things that we can learn from this passage in Matthew chapter 2 by comparing the perspective that the Magi bring to Jesus' birth with the perspective that King Herod has about Jesus' birth. So first, let's think about something that the Magi and Herod have in common. They share a single-minded focus. Now, the object of their focus is very different, but they both exhibit a singular pursuit. The Magi have their focus trained on the star, the revelation from the heavens. They've dropped everything to pursue it. Look at their words when they arrive in Jerusalem. They ask, "Where is the one who has been born King of the Jews? We saw his star when it rose and have come to worship him." We saw his star when it rose. They were given a revelation and they dropped everything else that they were doing and followed it. Remember, these Magi are foreigners. They've come a very long way to find the ruler that they believe this star has signaled. But think also about the revelation itself. This is a revelation that has come in stages. It's come in steps. And this is pretty logical when you think about it. Put yourself in the place of the Magi. They've seen a new star in the sky, and it points west. That's it. I don't even know if I'm pointing west. Give me the benefit of the doubt. It points west, and that's all they know. So they start moving west. And as they begin traveling, they continue to read the star, and it leads them to the land of Palestine, to the land where the people of Israel lived, even though they were under Roman occupation. But it would be impossible to look up overhead, if you think about it, and say, well, yes, of course, that star is over Bethlehem and not the village right next door. And so when they get to the land of Palestine, what do? They go to the capital city. They go to Jerusalem. Because that's as far as the revelation had taken them, and they needed some more information. So they go to the capital city, they seek out the local rulers, the historians, the religious leaders, and they ask them, Where is the one to be born King of the Jews? Now, if someone had something really important that you had to go do, and they said, it's in England, but they didn't give you any more information, you probably wouldn't start looking in Bedford or any small town. I just chose a town that started with B, like Bethlehem. You'd probably start in London. You might go to the capital city. You might seek out someone important who might have this kind of information. That's exactly what the Magi have done. But just like the Magi, Herod also exhibits this single-minded focus, but the object of his is completely different. Herod is completely focused on his own power and position. And this is proved later on in the chapter that Herod will do anything he can to protect his own power and position. Remember the Magi's question to Herod and the religious leaders, where is the one born King of the Jews? And what was Herod's response? Herod was greatly disturbed, because King of the Jews was his title. And he knew for a fact he hadn't just been born, so they must be referring to someone else. He feels threatened immediately. I think all too often this is precisely our reaction when we are confronted or challenged. We immediately get defensive and try to protect whatever power or position we hold in whatever situation it is. I see myself doing this in nearly every argument I've ever had. We're selfish. We're so often selfish in a single-minded way. And our own power and position distract us from the true purpose of our lives. The Magi have recognized that Herod, whatever temporary rule he holds in the land, is not the king that they seek. The Magi are not distracted by false kings or false authorities. They get the information they need from Herod and the religious leaders, and then they're straight on their way. Verse 9 tells us, after they had heard the king, they went on their way, and the star they had seen when it rose went ahead of them. Herod, on the other hand, is completely distracted by his own temporary and illegitimate right to the throne. He calls the Magi secretly in verse 7, already laying the groundwork, I think, to quash any outside claim to his throne. See, Herod knew his position amongst the Jews was already tenuous. Herod wasn't a Jew himself. He was an Idumean. He had been installed by the Roman authorities. The Romans had put Herod in place, thinking to themselves, if we put one of our own men in place in order to rule over the land of Palestine, that's probably better than putting a Jew in charge, who tends to be a bit volatile and rebellious. So the Jews already had a suspicious and quite low view of King Herod. And Herod thinks that any even semi-legitimate person who makes a claim to his throne would probably gain the support of the Jews quite easily. But Matthew makes it explicit for us who the rightful ruler of Israel is. He does this by bringing in the citation from Micah chapter 5. The Old Testament prophet, he says, but you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah. For out of you will come a ruler who will shepherd my people Israel. Jesus is the one who has been born King of the Jews. And he is the king that the Magi seek. And they will not be distracted from finding him by Herod and his false reign. Now we come to the greatest difference between the perspectives of the Magi and Herod. And this difference manifests itself in the actions that these characters take upon finding out who the king is or where the king is, the true king. The story tells us that the star went ahead of the Magi. Verse 10, when they saw the star, when the Magi saw the star, they were overjoyed. I love that verse because I can imagine the response that the Magi might have had. Having left Jerusalem in the direction of Bethlehem, really not a long journey. Jerusalem and Bethlehem are quite close to one another. And seeing the star again, I imagine it's something like when you spend most of your time in cities, as I have, and then you drive out into the countryside where there are no longer any street lights, no longer any house lights that you can see. Only the darkness, and on a clear night you can look up and the number of stars you can see will just blow you away. But I also see in this verse, they saw the star, they were overjoyed. I see a beautiful metaphor. Those moments when we see the light of the world and experience the joy of beholding the light that pierces the darkness. The light of salvation, the light that cannot be overcome, the light that is Jesus. So the Magi arrive at the house. And they saw the child with his mother Mary. And what do? Three things. They bow down, they worship, and they offer gifts. This is the appropriate response upon finding the true and rightful king. It's worship. They get down on their knees. They lower their faces to the floor in front of a child no more than 2 years old. They bow themselves as low as they can get. But it's because this baby is the true king, the one sent by and revealed by God. But Herod's response is exactly the opposite. Still single-mindedly focused on his own power, Herod realizes that his plan to ascertain the child's identity from the Magi has been foiled. The angel later on appears to the Magi in a dream and warns them not to go back to Herod. Herod's plan of finding out who the boy is has been foiled. And so, in anger, he's furious, the text tells us. He lashes out and he gives orders to kill every baby boy in the vicinity of Bethlehem who is under 2 years old. There are allusions here to Exodus and to the role played in that story by Pharaoh, king of Egypt. Herod's heart is hardened in his single-minded focus on his own power. It's hardened just like Pharaoh's heart was hardened. And it's amazing to me that Herod's plan, this plan to kill all the baby boys who are under 2 years old, prompts a sort of reverse exodus for Jesus and his family. An illegitimate ruler enthroned in the promised land now threatens the one who is truly meant to rule the people of promise. And so the anointed son, the promised one, returns to Egypt, out of which the people of Israel were brought from oppression so many centuries earlier. Herod has no inclination to bow down, no inclination to worship, no inclination to offer gifts. I wonder, what is your inclination when confronted by Jesus, the true and rightful king? See, the Magi bring what seems like really fantastic gifts. Gold, frankincense, myrrh, costly things in the ancient world, costly things even today. But we must not elevate the Magi in this story to a position that they do not hold. It's not as if these powerful and influential kings have come to bestow their blessing on the lowly and humble infant. This is where I think some of our modern renderings of the visit of the Magi have gone a bit wrong. They too often depict ornately dressed Magi, and perhaps that is accurate. But they're holding their gifts and they're standing above the baby Jesus and they're peering down into the manger, almost as if they're towering over the baby Jesus. The image is one of their prominence and the baby's humility. But this story turns that right around. The roles are exactly reversed, as Matthew has told it. It's the Magi who take the lowly and humble position. They bow down faces to the floor to get below the baby Jesus. And it's the child who takes the place of prominence in this story in Matthew 2, being proclaimed and then affirmed by the Magi as the true King of the Jews. And the roles of the gifts are reversed as well. On Christmas Day, I felt like I had brought a very inadequate gift to a very dear friend. It was slightly nicer than an empty mince pie tin, but only just. But however extravagant the material gifts were that the Magi brought, they are the inadequate gifts in this scene. The greatest gift is the child who was sent into the world to redeem it, who was given the name Jesus because he would save his people, who is God with us. He is greater. And because of that, we don't have to bring him anything. Anything we do bring is rags compared to the riches of grace that he offers us. We don't have to clean ourselves up, either physically or metaphorically. We don't have to say the right words or make the right motions with our hands or do the right things with our bodies. We only have to acknowledge him as King, as Lord of all, and worship him as who he truly is.